Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Darren?
I'm doing very well. Happy Black History Month.
Yay!
Hey, my brother, assalamu alaikum. Right out the gate.
Yeah. How you doing? I don't know how to respond to...
You know, so. That was a test to see if you'd say something vaguely racist back to me, and you passed with flying colors.
Yay! Not vaguely racist!
Not vaguely racist!
Not vaguely racist! Not vaguely racist!
Oh, man, that should be our slogan of our podcast. Oh, man. Hey, everybody, how's it going? And as I said up top, it is Black History Month, and SNL is off this week. So we'd figure we'd talk about a black movie there.
You almost said a blackie movie.
I did. Now I almost said something vaguely racist. Damn it! We lost our slogan. Our logo slogan.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me today?
Good God. So many things.
Oh, too many things. So we decided to make. What the hell is wrong with me today? Good God.
Do we want to start over?
Yes. Tape from New Jersey. Guys, we're talking about top five, all right? We're talking about this movie, Top Five, written and directed by Chris Rock. The third movie he wrote and directed, the first two being Head of State and I Think I Love My Wife. And, I don't think we've ever talked about a Chris Rock movie on this podcast. Yeah.
We have not. I mean, I think we've covered a couple movies that he had cameos in, but nothing that could qualify as like a Chris Rock movie.
Yeah, I mean with good reason, because as far as his movies go, they're pretty touch and go, we'll say, as far as
he hasn't had any big hits.
No.
You know, he hasn't had like a big breakthrough thing. I mean, he's made his mark mainly as a stand-up, I would say.
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, even he would say like his time on SNL wasn't that great. Like, I mean, he had like NatX and he had a few commercials. I mean, a few sketches pop here and there, but nothing mm-hmm. really great. And but
I mean, that's what first made his name. I mean,
that's true. But like, even when he left SNL and then he went on to do Living Color for a little bit,
yeah.
Like his career was kind of on the downslide.
Yeah,
people were kind of forgetting about him. The only thing he really had up to that point was he did have a half-hour HBO special, Big Ass Jokes, which I don't think a lot of people remember. But
I haven't seen that. I remember like Bring the Pain, which he did in 1996. That was like his big breakthrough.
That was the thing that made him. Like,
yeah. I remember that won so many Emmys.
It was a huge, huge hit. Like, I remember up till that point, my favorite 1 hour long comedy special was Eddie Murphy, Delirious.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was like the greatest hour I've ever seen. And then I saw Bring the Pain and I was like, oh, this...
Yeah,
there's a new sheriff in town. This might be it was really amazing. It was like one of those things I watched over and over and over again. I watched it just for the first time. It was because it was just hilarious, and then I just kept watching it. I watched it with my friends and showed them, and it's like, oh, you got to watch this. This is amazing. And then after a while, I just watched it just to see, kind of just like study it as like a comedian, just like how he's doing what he did. It was that level of like I was pretty obsessed with it. Now I think about it. But
I
had a problem.
But I mean that is one of the like the seminal stand-up specials now. That is one that is a great one to study. I mean, because it's incredible material. It's an incredible performance.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell he has just worked that stuff.
Yeah.
And he knows exactly what he's doing. He's doing everything with purpose, and he's just like striding that stage. He's like strutting back and forth.
Yeah, that's the thing he'd always do. He's like kind of strut back and forth on the stage, like almost like a mountain lion or some type of wild cat, just like ready to strike, attack his audience with his jokes.
Yeah.
And so after that, he blew up like crazy, and he just started doing movies. But all the movies he did were, I don't know, they were kind of touch and go. They weren't like that. It depends. He did like the Grown Ups movies and. Did commercial? I mean, he did voiceovers for Madagascar and whatnot, and they were all kind of touch and go. Because I think for a while, like people thought his trajectory would be the same as Eddie Murphy, where he would be this hilarious stand up, and then he'd go and do these amazing movies, like Eddie Murphy did with like 48 Hours and Trading Places and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But like as far as movies goes, I think even Chris Rock will admit it never really popped. So I think that's probably why we never really did. Chris Rock movie, except for the one we're going to do today, which I think is his best work, movie-wise.
You know, that would be tough for me to say, but just because I haven't seen too many of his other movies. I know of his movie. I haven't seen I Think I Love My Wife. I know he did Down to Earth, which was a remake of Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah, that didn't...
Which is in itself a remake of, I think the original was Here Comes Mr. Jordan.
Oh.
Something like that. I don't know. I can't remember what the original version was.
Movie about Michael Jordan.
Yes. but, I mean, he's also, you know, he did that Everybody Loves, or Everybody Hates Chris.
Everybody Hates Chris TV show.
TV
yeah.
show, which that had a decent run.
That was all
right. Run for 4 years, apparently.
That was all right. He had the HBO show, the Chris Rock show, which kind of birthed Pootie Tang.
Uh-huh.
I believe. Uh-huh. So he had like a few things pop here and there, but like as far as movies go, they're like kind of touch and go.
Yeah, a little hit and miss, but let's find out about top 5 here. I got the DVD here
that I got
from my local library.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read the back of it. Here we go. Pulsing with the rhythm of his greatest stand-up, Chris Rock's top 5 takes things to the next level, reveling in the high and the low. And blending a star-studded comedic romp with an irresistible romance. Top 5 digs under the surface of show business, politics, raps, and the exigencies of being black and famous today, holding it all up to the light in a way only Chris Rock can.
My brother.
Kind of overselling it. I'm
a little bit. This is the greatest movie you'll ever see in your life about black people.
Mingling echoes of Woody Allen and Dick Gregory with the energy of Kanye West and Jay-Z, Top 5 is an original and radically new kind of American movie. Written by and starring Chris Rock, Top 5 tells the story of New York City comedian turned film star Andre Allen, whose unexpected encounter with a journalist, Rosario Dawson, forces him to confront the comedy career and the past that he's left behind. Top 5 is a breakthrough comedy critics are calling dazzlingly, uproariously funny.
Yeah, so, I mean, this movie came out December 12th, 2014. Had a budget of $12 million, and it made $26 million. So it was a decent hit. And, I remember seeing this in the theater, and the main reason I saw it in the theater is because all the critics were, like, really going gaga over it, saying, oh, this is the Chris Rock movie you've been waiting for. This is, like, where his talent and his movie-making abilities, like, you know, come to a crescendo. Like, this is the movie you'd want to see.
Yeah, I remember. I didn't see this in theaters at the time when it first came out. I remember the previews looking really good, and I was like, oh, yeah, I should go see that. And it was just one of those things I never got around to seeing.
Okay.
All right. But I watched it now. And
there you go.
Ready to talk about it.
Hey, all right. All right, so, yeah, let's dive into it. I mean, like John said, this movie, he plays this comedian, Andre Allen, or he was a comedian, but now he's like wants to be a movie star and he wants to be taken more seriously.
He's done a lot of big hit comedy movies. He did he's done 3 movies called Hammy the Bear, which
Hammy
is
the
him,
Bear, yeah,
that's, him in a bear suit.
Yeah, it's it's an ongoing gag throughout this movie. He made this, like I said, this movie called Hammy the Bear, who is a bear who is a cop and he fights crime with Luis Guzman.
I totally missed that.
You missed
that? I totally
that?
Missed Luis Guzman.
They showed him in a clip from one of his movies, the Hammy the Bear movies, and Luis Guzman was his like partner.
Wow.
And then he was like, oh, how are we going to get through this? How are we going to bust these guys there, Hammy? It's like, oh, well, you know, you go and I'll cover you. And it's Hammy time, because his catchphrase was, it's right. Hammy time. So, like, yeah.
I must have been taking a note or something when Luis Guzman.
How do you
up
miss Luis
screen.
Guzman?
I don't know. I feel bad now.
Shameful. So as cheesy as this movie premise sounds, this movie actually made a ton of money, and it's like his most successful movie franchise to date. There's like 3 Hammy movies, and throughout the movie, like as he walks the streets, there's always people yelling, "Hey, Hammy, what's up,
yeah,
Hammy?"
Yeah, I enjoyed that, like because this movie it takes place in and is shot in New York City.
Yes,
and it's like shot in the real New York City. It's not like a Hollywood New York City street.
It's not Vancouver.
Exactly. I mean, and this. It really has the feel and the pulse of New York, and I really enjoyed that because New York's just such a great city.
It's something else.
But throughout the movie, you hear people in the background just going, "Hey, Hammy!
Hammy!"
And they don't really call attention to it, and he never really stops and talks to any of those people, but it's just this constant undercurrent in the movie, which is kind of cool. It was a nice touch.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it's something that every celeb has to deal with. Like, I think I remember like when Robin Williams was around people... he said, yeah, people still shout out, hey, Mork, what's up, Mork? Like, it's,
yeah.
It's like, it doesn't go away.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and Robin Williams, he was always the first to, like, mock himself and call himself Mork on, like, talk show appearances and yeah. stuff. So.
Oh, hey, Mork.
Yeah.
That's my Mork. That's my Robin Williams impression. Oh.
I mean, I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure if you're any kind of celebrity, you're constantly reminded of, like, the worst or the most annoying thing that you've ever done.
Probably, yeah. I'm sure people woke up to Adam Sandler and go, how about you?
Yeah.
Like we've done on this podcast.
Exactly, exactly. And Andre Allen, he's constantly being hit with the hammy thing, but he is trying to get away from that. He doesn't want to do funny movies anymore, and he's trying to rebrand himself.
Right.
And he's done this new movie called Uprise, and it's Uprise with a Z.
That's right.
Which is about a Haitian slave revolution.
Yeah, Duddy Boukman.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah,
and this was a real thing. We should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's basically this Haitian revolutionary who kind of came up and was just slaughtering white people.
Killed story. 10,000 white people. I think they said.
I believe was so. It? Yeah, yeah.
Should
like
I
that.
Look him up?
Sure.
On Wikipedia.
Happy Black History Month.
let me find. Like, give me a couple minutes to find that.
But yeah, and in the movie, it's Andre Allen talking to Charlie Rose, and they're basically giving us this whole backstory about how he's had trouble with alcohol and the law. He's a recovering alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
and he's also engaged to a reality TV star named Erica Long, played by Gabrielle Union. And we get to know a little bit about her and how she's. I mean, she doesn't have a talent. She's not a singer or an actress. She's literally all she does is she's a reality star.
Yeah, she's kind of like one of those Real Housewives people, I suppose.
Yeah.
She's just kind of famous for being famous.
Yes, exactly. Usually every time they show her, they have the little Bravo logo in the bottom. And
I enjoyed that touch. Whenever it cuts to her, there's just a Bravo logo at the bottom because she lives her life on reality television.
Yeah, very much so. So as Charlie Rose interviewing him, people from the audience say, hey, when are you going to go back to doing stand-up? When are you going to go back to doing another hammy movie? And then he kept saying, no, I'm done with that. I'm done with stand-up. I'm done with comedy. I want to be a serious actor now. I got serious stuff to say. And, it's another thing that goes throughout the movie. People want him to be hammy again, and he just doesn't want to do hammy. He doesn't want to do comedy again. So it's just basically him promoting this movie, Uprise.
You're right. And the movie takes place in a 24-hour period, or less than, over the course of a day.
Yes.
And so it's the day that his movie is opening, and he's, of course, got a lot riding on this movie because he's rebranding himself.
Right.
And, as you might have expect from our description of the Hammy movies, they were not critically well received. There is, they've been torn apart by the critics.
It kind of reminded me of, you ever see Funny People, Adam Sandler's movie?
Yeah, sure.
It kind of reminded me of that. It's one of those, because throughout Funny People, Adam Sandler is this comedian who's done all these cheesy Adam Sandler-esque movies,
mm-hmm.
Where he plays a baby with a man's head and stuff.
Right, it's just a mildly exaggerated version of the types of movies that Adam Sandler has done.
Exactly. So it's like that, where it's, Hammy the Bear, these movies that look cheesy and terrible, and probably are, but they make tons of money.
Yeah, but they're successful. And you did three of them.
Yeah.
And there's this one a critic in particular, James Nielsen from the New York Times, who just rips these movies apart.
Right.
And so Andre has kind of a grudge against the New York Times because of this. But
failing New York Times.
but Rosario Dawson's character works for the New York Times, and she's assigned to do a profile of him, and she's following him around for the day as he goes through his. Basically, his publicity junket for the new movie.
Yeah, so I think at first he's very reluctant to do it because he has a grudge against the New York Times, but then he talks to his agent, I believe, played by Kevin Hart, saying, and he says, yeah, you got to do this because, no one's, we're trying to sell this movie, we're trying to sell this new you, so you better go on and do this thing, fella.
Yeah.
And also in this movie, Chris Rock has an assistant played by J.B. Smooth, who plays his assistant, Silk, who's kind of like his right-hand man who gets him everything he wants. And throughout the movie, he apparently has a thing for larger ladies.
The movies, whenever there is a heavier set sister that they come across, he is hitting on her. Either in the background or, you hear him.
Just
Or you just see him
just catcalling, like, "Hey, Nick, what's up there? Yeah. What's up there, bigness?" And when I was like, "Wow!"
And that's a funny running gag.
He's got a type.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, Andre meets up with Chelsea Brown, played by Rosario Dawson, and he reluctantly agrees to, you know, do kind of have her follow her around on this press tour he's doing, this press junket he's doing.
And he's real reluctant because he's got a beef against the Times, because this James Nielsen guy's just torn him apart. And, you know, she's like, "Well, I don't have anything to do with that." And he's like, "Well, no, but that's your guy. You're on staff with that guy." So,
yeah. So it's like he's very reluctant. But then they kind of agree to, like, "No, we're just going to do everything very, like," I think Chelsea says, "If you just answer my questions honestly, and I'll be as very honest and fair as I possibly can be."
Yeah, and it comes out kind of quickly as they're talking that Andre is also a recovering alcoholic. He's in the program. He's in AA, and we soon find out that Chelsea is as well, and they kind of bond over that.
Yeah, they're both 4 years sober.
Right, and she asks him, like, she first starts to ease into the interview. She's like, "Hey, were you the class clown in school?" And he's like, "You're not going to ask me that hack question, are you?"
Right.
And so they kind of break through the barriers, and then he's like, "Ask me a real question." And she's like, "Okay, you know." And a refrain that is like rigorous honesty, which is like a thing in the program.
Yeah, and I think she asks, like, "Why aren't you funny anymore? Why are you stopped doing something?" She asked a question you wouldn't ask,
right?
Like somebody like that, like something that could be offensive, to
right? And that it's really blunt. And then she asks him, "Okay, you're in the program. When did you hit bottom?"
Oh, and then we go into this story about
Houston in 2003.
A little incident that happened in Houston.
Yeah, where this is when Andre, he's touring as a stand-up, and he flies into Houston, and he's picked up by a guy from the comedy club.
Yes, Jazzy D, played by Cedric the Entertainer.
And nice performance by Cedric.
Yeah, he really gets into it. Like
he goes all out.
Yeah, like, I'm not a huge Cedric guy, but, like, I got to admit, he made me chuckle here quite a bit. Like, he shows up at the airport. You know, like, he has kind of like long processed straight hair and like a kind of like a pork pie hat, I guess it is, and and like a holding a red Solo cup, as you do, and he's like, "Oh, what's up there, player? I'm Jazzy D." It's like, "I run Houston." So so he brings Andre to the hotel he's at, and he's like, "You know, this is where you're gonna be at, and I'll pick you up later after the show. We're gonna go to the strip club and la da da." There was this one scene that where it happens where he drops off Andre at the hotel, and he said, "Hey, do you think it'd be okay if I took some of them hangers in the closet?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "What?"
And then I need some wooden hangers.
Yeah, and then he sees that they have like the locks, like those hangers that you can't take out of the closet.
Right.
And he's like, "Oh, they got the locks on them. They got the locks. Oh, they hip to your boy." I laughed. I was like, "Oh, that's funny."
But Jazzy D, he's talking it up, and he's like, "Hey, anything you want. You want booze. You want drugs. You want women.
Right.
You know, I'm your boy. I'll get that stuff for you." And they decide to go out to the club to, like, promote his appearance ostensibly, but really they're just going out to party.
Yeah, and it's just him getting drunk and wasted. Another comedian, Bruce, is there, I think, because Andre's opening for Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And, things get a little wild.
So Jazzy sets it up so that a couple women come back to Andre's hotel room. And
some lovely ladies.
And, like, Andre goes back to his hotel room, and he was talking about how you get that really bad sleep when you're waiting for waiting for a hose to come by.
Host sleep.
Which
I was like, "Is that a thing?"
So, like, any slight noise, he's like, he's
women.
Like startling away because he's always expecting someone to come to the door. I enjoyed that. That seemed like something right out of Chris Rock's stand-up.
Yeah, a lot of stuff from this movie just seems like a very personal movie to Chris Rock.
And
it seems like, oh yeah, this seems like something he went through or is going through.
Yeah, like it could be like a bit of a Romano Clef or something like that, you know? It's like a story about you, but the names are changed.
Romano Clefer? I didn't even
know. Romano Clef.
Romano Clef.
Yeah, I think it's French.
Oh, fancy. Yeah. I never heard that. I said Romano Clef. Like, who's Romano Clemfer? All right.
He was on Hogan's Heroes.
Ah, gotcha.
Hogan!
All right, so the women come in, and, they're having a good time. They're... He orders some jalapeno poppers and chicken fingers, as you do for your ladies.
Sure. Because he's classy like that.
That's classy as hell, man. And so, then they start smoking weed and they start drinking. Things get a little sexual. You know, having a pillow fights, I guess.
Huge pillow fight. There's so many feathers all around.
Yeah.
There's just like a multitude of feathers. I don't even know if like hotels have feather pillows anymore.
Yeah. I didn't even know pillow fights were like a thing. And is that like a foreplay for some people?
It's got to be a fetish for somebody.
I guess.
I mean, just law averages.
If you're playing at the averages.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to want to be in the feathers.
Yeah.
So, one thing leads to another, and before you know it, he's having coitus with these two ladies,
mm-hmm.
living the life.
He is having intercourse with two ladies at the same time.
Hey, now.
And
twins.
And he's talking about, hey, I never thought I'd be so lucky. Heaven had sent these two angels to me. And then, as he's in the middle of the door, there's a knock on the door.
Yeah.
And it's Jazzy D.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, now it's a party. And then he's just... Jazzy D takes off his clothes, literally pushes Andre aside, and he starts going to town
with the two ladies, his own self,
slamming it out.
And so the best night of Andre's life becomes the worst night because he is watching this other guy he barely knows.
Yeah.
Go to town with these two ladies.
Just slam out these two women. And I don't even know why he stays. That's the thing I didn't get about this. Like, he said, oh, I was naked. I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. But he just kind of stays there, and he's just like...
Well, it's his hotel room.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you can't just like stare there and look at these women while you're, you know, it's just you know, put on some sweatpants and go get a smoke or something. That's why I'm just like, no, I can't be here for this. So he just kind of just stares in shock and all naked.
Yeah,
and
I think he's just too traumatized to do anything. He's like practically assuming the fetal position in the corner.
Yeah, well, I mean, at one point he is, because like at the end after Jazzy D... arrives to his destination, we'll say. Like, Chris Rock is just shocked, and he's like literally, it's one of the more graphic scenes in the movie where he's like in the fetal position, just freaked out on the bed that's covered in feathers and just puddles and puddles of just fluids.
Huge
and sweat.
Wet spots on
the huge bed. Wet spots.
Yeah.
And like, you know what it is.
Yeah.
You know. It's just, and like
so that was Andre's rock bottom.
Yeah, and I saw that. I was like, oh,
yeah.
So, anyways, after that, the women kind of come back to his apartment or his hotel, saying, "Hey, where's Jazzy? We need to find him. He said that if we fucked, we'd both get $100,000 each. And if you don't give us the money, we're gonna scream rape." And he's like, "I don't know that guy. I don't know what you're talking about." And of course, you're not getting the money. The women scream rape, and he gets arrested.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, of course, then after that, Jazzy D comes, bails him out. And he's like, oh, you're lucky I knew the judge. Because, you know, if it wasn't, you would have been here for longer. So, like, I'm just going to go drop my daughter off at school.
But then that was a nice touch.
Yeah, so that was his rock bottom. After that, Andre never drank after that. So I,
Which doesn't quite work math-wise, because this movie came out in 2014. This flashback was... 2003.
Right.
And that was, if he's 4 years sober, I don't know.
I didn't think about
it. I don't think the movie takes place in 2007.
I didn't, you know what?
Because they say Obama's president several times.
Huh. I didn't realize that till just now.
So maybe, I'm just thinking of it now.
Some continuity.
This movie has a conceptual hole at the center of it.
It does, doesn't it? Oh, wow. All right, well.
I don't know.
It's theater of the mind. You
just an idle thought. Maybe that was his rock bottom, but he didn't immediately get better after that. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
But he credits his relationship with Erica Long to helping him in his recovery.
I guess. Yeah, maybe he relapsed or something in between.
Who knows?
Wait, maybe that makes sense. Oh, and also, I think we need to mention, so before he talked about all this whole gross story, he's with Chelsea, and Chelsea's like, oh, before we continue, I need to get my recorder at my apartment. Could you just come with me?
Yeah.
Like, so he goes to the apartment. He sees kind of Chelsea's place. He meets Chelsea's daughter, and he notices that Chelsea has, like, these Cinderella books that she wrote. Because, like, I think Chelsea's daughter has, like, a thing about she's writing her
own. A school assignment. She writes her own version of Cinderella, and she's written a modern-day version of Cinderella.
Right.
Where I don't remember all the ins and outs of her story. I remember that the prince in Cinderella was replaced with Prince the musician, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah. So that's something that comes into play later. And also, he finds out that Chelsea actually writes articles for like Cosmo and Glamour under a pseudonym, Shakira.
Yeah, she writes a sex column for Cosmo. Yeah. But she writes it under an alias. You know, she's like, oh, you know, I only do that for like my not serious stuff. I use my real name on the serious stuff.
Right, exactly.
So,
all right. So as that's going on, so they go around town going on the press tour for this movie, Uprise. Also, Andre goes to pick up the rings for the wedding, and he finds out that his fiance Erica kind of changed the order and added to the order and make it a bigger ring, which kind of peeves him off.
Yeah. Like and then he calls her about it, and she's like, oh, well, the TV people insisted on that, and right. I didn't think you would mind. And like Andre, he doesn't want to do anything on camera. He doesn't want to really participate in the reality TV show of it. He doesn't even want to like kiss her at the airport on camera when he's leaving.
Right. Like you said, like he doesn't want to kiss her on camera, but then Erica says, well, if you don't kiss her on camera, it's like it doesn't never happen. So you get the sense that Erica's like just pretty much living for the camera. Like everything is very strategic or something like that, or very, very, you know, everything's for the camera, basically. Mm-hmm, it's all for the camera.
Everything's a show.
Everything's a show.
And then so after that, Andre and Chelsea, they're going through their day. They're going through the city. They go to an XM satellite radio station, and he goes through, and he's appearing on several shows.
Right. Yeah.
We see him recording a spot with Brian Regan,
the mighty Brian Regan,
stand-up comic Brian Regan, playing a DJ.
Yeah, I rarely see him in movies, so like I was really surprised to see him.
No, I guess they're just buddies. And he's doing like, you know, hey, this is Andre Allen, and when I listen to satellite radio, I listen to blah 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 blah. And then Brian Regan's like, okay, that was good. Could you put a little more stank on it?
Yeah, put some stank on it. Put some stank.
And Andre is just not giving him anything, and he's like, stank? What do you mean? What do you?
You know, stank it up. Go stanky on it.
Could you demonstrate? What?
Like, you know, hey, I'm Andre Allen, and whoa, when I listen to XM, like something like that. Stank it up. Stank.
Yeah, and he basically wants like more of a black version.
Yeah, he wants jive it up.
Yeah.
Homie.
Yeah.
Like and that. It's,
and
nah,
it's,
mean.
It's a very homie don't play that moment. So
yeah. Oh,
Andre like just goes like, hey motherfuckers, when I listen to motherfucking satellite radio, I listen to motherfucking
and Brian Regan like, you know what, the first take was fine.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in there. We can use that.
Yeah,
that was a bad call on my part.
Yeah, the yellow one's the sun.
and we see him appearing on the Opie and Anthony show.
Yeah, remember that? Remember Opie and Anthony?
This movie is only like 6 years old, but it is such a time capsule already because, like early on, we've got Charlie Rose before he got Me Too'd.
Yeah.
We have mention of Prince.
Yeah.
Before he unfortunately passed away too young. And we got the Opie and Anthony show. I mean, it's like so many things that they seem like bygone eras now.
It's a moment in time. There's actually one point later in the movie where they're at a coffee shop, which is like this spot in a Union Square, where it's like a like this old kind of 60s coffee shop, but it kind of turned into like a nightclub. And it just, that spot, it was like a very popular spot, and it just recently closed down a couple months ago, and now it's like a Chase Bank.
Oh, wow.
So even that was like, oh, yeah, I remember a coffee shop.
Wow.
It's a moment in time, my friends.
It is something else.
So then they go on all the XM shows, Opie and Anthony. We see Jim Norton for a bit. We see he goes on Sway.
Yeah.
Just promoting. And then at one point, they kind of go, they take a detour because I think Andre wants to visit some of his old friends from his old neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was an interesting scene where he goes to the project buildings, and then there's like three kind of older gentlemen just hanging out.
Yeah.
Like in their sixth, like older.
And they're calling out to Andre. They obviously know Andre.
Yeah. Hey, Hollywood! What's up, Hollywood?
Yeah.
And one of the older men goes up to him, and it's a man played by Ben Vereen.
The great Ben Vereen.
We get Ben Vereen in this thing.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, what's going on there, player? And then he's like, hey, how's it going? Are you going to come to the wedding? Are you going
to,
you know?
You're coming to the bachelor party, which is later tonight.
And then he's like, nah, you know, some of us got to work. We all can't, you know, party like you.
Right. I'll come to your next one.
Yeah.
Which is, woo, that's some major shade.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll get your next marriage.
It's like, oh, you're going to marry like an Asian woman or a white woman next time?
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah. And then, but after that older man gives him that shade, he like almost immediately says, hey, you know, actually, can I borrow some money? I got, like, you know, I need, you know, can I hold some? So, of course, Andre gives him some money. He's like, yeah, here you go. It's like, all right, thanks, man. And then a Rosario of, you know, Chelsea say, who was that? I was like, oh, that was my dad.
And he's never seen again in the movie. That was, that's just like the one scene with him, Ben Vereen, one scene wonder.
Yeah, I really wish they focused a little bit more on that. Like,
I don't know. I thought it was really interesting where they just give you a hint of, and they show you what their relationship is like, how even his own father is kind of leeching off his fame and his fortune.
Yeah. Like,
I kind of like that they didn't get into that more.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, maybe gives
you a little taste, a little hint of what's...
Just a little smathering of it. Like, I kind of felt there was like a little something more there, but I was like, all right, I guess that was it.
Yeah.
So then he go visits his old friends. One of which was a person he used to date, which played by Sherry Shepherd.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey.
That was surprising.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Andre, what you doing? So then he goes into the apartment, and it's like all these friends he grew up with who knew him since he was like a young kid. And in this room, we got Leslie Jones. We got Jay Farrow. We got Tracy Morgan. We got Michael Che.
Che.
And we got another actor, Hassan Johnson, I believe his name, who you may know him better as Weebe from The Wire. And, like, yeah, all these, we got this room full of just people, and they're all just hanging out, kicking back, and, like, just, you know, ribbing each other's, you know, busting balls and telling jokes and whatnot.
Yeah, and Chelsea interviews a few of the people there, and, you know, just like, hey, well, what was he like back in the day, you know, and... And yeah, it's interesting. I thought maybe his relationships with some of these people could have been clarified a little bit more, because I was like, okay, are some of these people his siblings? Are they just old friends? They never really define most of it. And it's not until like Sherry Shepherd's character's asked, like, oh, do you regret breaking up with him?
Yeah.
That we find out that they were a thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, it is what it is. You know, I love my husband, and that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, do you regret it? And he's like... Yeah, every fucking day.
Every damn day.
Like, I got on him because he was on the PlayStation all the time. Like, if I knew what he was going to be, I would have built him a PlayStation.
And I got the feeling that most of these scenes were just, you know, Chris Rock and all these people riffing with each other.
Yeah, very much so. Like, I really just got the sense that they just set up a camera and got a bottle of, you know, Alizé or whatever. And it was like, all right, let's just talk and hang out and see what happens. And then, of course, they start talking about like their top five MCs, top five rappers, and you know, which is something that happens like to a lot of people. Like, who are your top five? Who are your top five? You know, top five albums or top five comedians? Which is a theme that kind of goes on throughout the movie.
It is a bit of a refrain for the movie. Yeah,
right, right. And I mean, it was a pretty hilarious scene. I really dug this.
Yeah,
this
it was entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you could see Tracy Morgan just being old Tracy Morgan, just
being old Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, yeah. I was hilarious as soon as I came out the womb. Like, when I was born, my mother wasn't crying. She was laughing. It's getting better. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm getting good.
That was a good Tracy.
Thank you.
That was a good Tracy.
You hear that, SNL? If you need a Tracy Morgan impression, I am available.
He is right here.
I'm right here. Yes. Follow me on Twitter, at Darren Credible. D-A-R-A-Credible. Send me, email me or text me for my avails. So then after that, he hangs out with all these friends, and it's a great scene. And he goes off in a car for his next appointment. They get into like a bit of a car accident, a bit of a fender bender. They immediately leave because they know that if the people in the car find out that Andre Allen's in the car, like, they think, oh, they're going to sue Andre Allen.
Right, and then it's their lucky day.
Yeah, exactly. And, cha-ching.
And they're walking out on the street, and J.B. Smoove's character is sort of running interference for him. But he's, like, Andre's getting more attention on the street because he's got this guy, this handler, in front of him. And Chelsea's like, why don't you just be a person and just, you know,
just walk the streets. Yeah.
And
I mean, it makes sense because, like, I mean, if you, I don't know how many people have been in New York, but like, you do from time to time, we'll just see just random celebrities walk the streets in New York by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you don't make a big deal out of it, it won't be a big deal.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Well, that's a very New York thing is like, I mean, I don't think people raise too much fuss over celebrities that they would most any other place. Probably the only other place that's as blasé about celebrities is Los Angeles.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen like a celeb on the street just
I
randomly?
I once passed Janine Garofalo on the street. I was with a bunch of friends. We were walking to a concert. I think we were going to a They Might Be Giants concert. And we walked, we were like, Janine Garofalo was walking the opposite way past us on the street, and she's a fast walker. She's like a short person, but she has a fast stride.
She's got little legs.
And like, so she was past me by the time it registered that it was Janine Garofalo. And I was literally the only person in our group who saw her. And I was like, oh, that was Janine Garofalo who just passed us. And
yeah. I mean, yeah. It does, yeah, if you're in New York, it does happen. I do remember one time me and my friends saw like Dave Chappelle walk past us in the Village. I don't know if I mentioned it. There was one time where I went to a Wyclef concert in the city back when, the Carnival album came out? So it was back in 97, and I was at the concert, and Chris Rock was standing right behind me.
I think you've told me about that.
Yeah. And, of course, when I worked at the Virgin Megastore, I saw like a bunch of celebs coming in.
Right.
Like Spike Lee came in once, and I think Scott Wolf from Party of Five came in once.
You know. Did they come in together?
Yeah, they're homies.
I just want to imagine Spike Lee and Scott Wolf hanging out together. Like, what do those two talk about?
What don't they talk about? Just the most random pairing.
Spike's a huge Party of Five fan, man.
Yeah, like Spike Lee, Oliver Platt, Ollie. Wow, all right. Oh, there was that one time Tim Burton came into the store, and like all the goth people went crazy. It's like, oh my god, it's my Lord and Savior, Tim Burton. What were we talking about? So like basically, what happens is after they leave, after Chelsea says, "Yeah, just like you said, walk the streets, just be a person."
I remember seeing like some old documentary, and it was when John Lennon was living in New York City,
right?
They showed him just walking around, and he's like interacting with people. And like, you know, one guy's like, "Oh my God, John Lennon! Oh, hey, when's the new Beatle album coming out?" And he's like, "Oh, it's just come out. You just missed it." And you know, the John Lennon humor. Somebody asked him, "Is like, do you ever get mobbed in the street, or do you?" And he's like, "No, you just have to keep moving. Like that's the secret. You don't break stride. Just keep moving, and then you can go through and live your life."
Yeah, I think I imagine a lot of celebs have to do that, because if you stop to sign an autograph, or I guess now take a picture or a selfie with one person, then like there's a good chance somebody else will see that. I mean, and then they'll want a picture or a selfie,
and then before you know it, you're mobbed.
Yeah, like you just have to keep moving.
Yeah, I remember seeing there was that reality show with William Shatner and Henry Winkler, Like Than Never.
Right.
And it's these guys like traveling the world and going, to all these exotic countries and stuff. And Henry Winkler is in, I forget where it was, like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Henry Winkler is like signing autographs for everybody. Like, anybody who wants an autograph, and Shatner is just like, "No, I don't do that." He only like signs autographs under controlled circumstances. Because he's like, this is how it starts. Like, you know, then I get mobbed, and then I'm there for the next 2-3 hours.
Okay, but I mean, Henry Winkler does that. He seems to be okay with it.
I mean, Henry Winkler's...
Oh, Henry Winkler.
You know, he's a more friendly, open guy than William Shatner, apparently.
He is.
Shatner has his barriers.
Yeah, we all saw that SNL Star Trek sketch, so we know you know how he feels.
Exactly.
Like, get a life, you guys.
Right.
Oh, man. But yeah, Henry Winkler's dope. Like, I told you about that time I saw him at the Waterboy premiere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Guys, if you don't know, just go back in the archives. I'm not sure which episode it is. But I talked about meeting Henry Winkler, and he's super dope.
Yeah,
he's an A plus class.
A plus.
Oh shit! What didn't I think of that?
I don't know.
All right. Wow. Where were we at? All right. So Andre and Chelsea decided to like just walk the streets and take the train to the next press junket, and as they're doing it, they're just kind of having conversation, talking about movies and things and life, and you know, dig into some pretty interesting conversations about like how Planet of the Apes is like, you know, it could be seen as like white man's fear of black people taking over the earth.
Yeah, because he goes off on a bit about how the original Planet of the Apes premiered on April 3rd, 1968, and the very next day Martin Luther King was assassinated. And Chelsea's like, okay, so you're saying that James Earl Ray saw Planet of the Apes and then decided to assassinate MLK.
Connect the dots, people.
And it wasn't all this other stuff that made him decide to assassinate Martin Luther King.
It was the Planet of the Apes. Open up your third eye, people. Wake up, sheeple.
Which that was kind of an entertaining riff.
Yeah, that was good. And also, at one point, they decided to get some food from a food truck, and the Rosario Dawson, we find out she has like hot sauce in her purse, which comes into play later, which, of course, once I heard that, immediately reminded me of the whole Hillary Clinton thing. Like, oh, hot sauce in the purse thing. You don't remember that?
Refresh my memory. I've probably heard this, but I've forgotten.
Hillary was running for president back in 2016.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It was better days.
Yeah.
But when she did that, like, she was on a, I think it was maybe Tech and Sway or The Morning Show, some radio show.
Okay.
And, you know, a black radio show. And she's like, oh, hey, I have hot sauce in my purse. And she pulled out, like, hot sauce in her purse in order to connect to... I swear this was
the thing. I'm giving Darren my incredulous look right now. I'm like, he's like, Hillary Clinton carries hot sauce in her purse.
I know. We all... I know. Okay. I know.
I'm sure I'm doing what every single black person did in 2016.
Like, we call it side eye in the hood. And so she pulled out hot sauce in her bag, and we were all like, all right, we'll vote for you, but you don't.
I could do without all those like campaign events where like the politicians like, hey, I'm coming to the carnival. Let's have a corn dog. I don't care if the politician has a corn dog.
Yeah,
I know they're trying to relate to the locals and stuff, but
that's something this celebrity. I mean, politicians have to do that. Like, hey, I'm just like you. Let's go bowling. Let's go to a tractor pull or something, like whatever you guys like. Hey, I like having a Bud Light on a Saturday night.
I think I remember Obama doing like bowling at some point during one of his campaigns, and he was like a crap bowler.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
it's just like, and people were giving him crap for that, and it's just like, what does it matter? I don't care if the president's a crap bowler.
It doesn't, but he knows.
Bowling never comes into play in the presidency.
That's not how you get policies passed?
No.
Like, you're Mr. President, you got a 7-10 split. We can't. This won't get past the House unless you pick up that spare.
But really, would that be a worse system than what we have now? Wouldn't we be any worse off than we are now?
Lord, no. God. That's why I'm voting for a big Ernie McCracken for the House. Wow, that was a poll. I'm surprised they came up with this name.
You're in a gravy train with biscuit wheels.
Oh, God. Guys, watch Kingpin if you
want to. Watch Kingpin. It is so fucking hilarious.
Oh, my Lord in heaven. All right, so...
so they go to the hotel. They go to a press event for the movie Uprise.
Right.
And we get another couple celebrity cameos who are presumably his co-stars in the movie.
Yeah, this movie is chock-a-block with celebrities.
Chris Rock must have called in a lot of favors from his friends.
He knows people.
We have Taraji P. Henson and... I'm probably going to mangle her name.
Gabourey Sidibe.
Thank you. I don't pronounce her name very often, so right. I was sure I was going to screw that up.
That's okay.
And
it's them like promoting the movie. If you're a fan of like the New York comedy scene, you'll see some other New York comedians throughout this movie, like Seton Smith. You'll see Rachel Feinstein is in there for a minute.
I miss Rachel Feinstein.
She was like one of the PR people.
Oh, okay.
She's like, oh, you know, we got 10 minutes before we got to go to the next thing. She's in there for like a split second.
Okay.
If you know Will Sylvince, he's in the Uprising movie as one of the Haitian revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see like a bunch of New York comedians in this.
And during the scene, we kind of get the feeling that the public is not ready to embrace this movie because, like, he's still getting questions like, hey, when is there going to be a
Hammy the Bear?
Fourth Hammy the Bear movie. And, you know, So we get the feeling this movie's not going to do well.
Yeah.
Because it's just so against his brand.
Yeah. And I imagine a lot of celebs have this problem where they want to do something that's not the thing they're known for.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just met with a lot of resistance where people are just like, I don't know you from this. I know you from this. More of this.
It's like, remember when Tug Speedman did Simple Jack?
Wow.
You know, it's like that.
Yeah, exactly like
it's
that.
It's like that. It's just...
I'm not even going to attempt to do the Simple Jack voice because that will break that bell.
No,
with all the
and I am not gonna. I'm not gonna say that line. It was a famous line that Robert Downey Jr. had,
and he was like,
"Never go full." Wah.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. But also, guys, watch Tropic Thunder. It's a fantastic.
Tropic Thunder, very worth seeing.
Robert Downey Jr. kills it in them. Like it's one of his best works.
I am still amazed that in the year 2008, Robert Downey Jr. did blackface in a movie, and I don't think there was any blowback.
No, all the blowback.
Everybody was like, "That's awesome."
All the blowback was from Simple Jack. That caught all the flack.
Exactly.
Like, how did he,
that is just a testament to how universally beloved Robert Downey Jr. was.
Yeah, how did he...
And still is, I would say.
Yeah, he's Iron
Whereas,
Man.
Like, he does blackface and everybody's just like, yeah, that's cool.
How did the Jedi mind trick his way out of that?
I don't know. I mean, and even in a comedy, that is touchy stuff.
It is. But I think they, my theory is for that movie, like the way they got around it, for one thing, they had the rapper Al Pacino.
Calling him out.
Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Calling him out. So that kind of took some of the ease off it. And you also, the joke wasn't on him being like, you know, doing blackface or trying to be black. The joke was he was
so method.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he was, it was
that he thought he was a black person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like more of a joke on actors like Daniel Day-Lewis or, you know, Heath Ledger or Christian Bale, like actors who go so method that it's ridiculous and laughable.
I don't drop character until I finish the DVD commentary.
Yeah. Dude, did you ever listen to the DVD with the
I know that in the commentary for Tropic Thunder, and I know we're going on a big Tropic Thunder
We're going to get back to Tropic Thunder.
We'll get there. I mean, you know the drill. But yeah, he actually does the Tropic Thunder commentary in character, I understand.
He does. If you listen to the Tropic Thunder with the DVD commentary,
uh-huh.
Robert Downey Jr. is on it doing DVD commentary as his black character in the movie. Up until the point where he kind of has that mental breakdown.
Right.
And he goes back to the Australian actor he is.
Right.
So once that happened, then he turns into... He does commentary as the Australian actor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. So he's Robert Downey Jr. He's pretending he's an Australian
actor. He's a dude pretending to be a dude disguised as another dude.
He's acting as an Australian actor who's acting as a black man.
Right.
Like, that's...
Like, that's meta.
That is so...
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr., come on the podcast. You're if you can.
We love you.
Yeah, we love you.
And I think another thing, and I will finish with the Tropic Thunder thing this, I promise.
Maybe we should do Tropic Thunder.
Ben Stiller was a cast member for a hot minute, so we could get away with doing Tropic Thunder.
So was Robert Downey Jr.
So, yeah, that's true.
Bill Hader is in the movie.
This is also true.
Hmm.
Okay, we're doing Tropic Thunder next Black History Month.
All right.
But I think the other thing that really helped them was that the makeup was really good.
Right.
And it looked believable.
Yeah, it did.
You know, like the makeup people on that movie did a spectacular job.
They did.
Because it could have looked like Soul Man.
Oh.
You know?
My God.
It could have looked like, you know, C. Thomas Howell with a bad wig and a really dark tan.
It could have been like Al Jolson. It could have been like...
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still amazed they pulled that off. That is an amazing accomplishment.
Guys, we may have to do Tropic Thunder.
I think we are doing Tropic Thunder at some point. How can we not?
We're kind of doing it now.
Yeah. So anyway, top five.
Yeah, where the hell were we?
They just finished the press conference at the hotel for the movie, and as they're walking out of the movie,
Chelsea meets her boyfriend Brad. Yeah. Who she's been texting, you know, because it's his birthday. So
it's his 30th birthday, and she's like texting him throughout the day, wishing him a happy birthday, and she's not hearing back from him. She doesn't know what's up with him. This is kind of like this runner throughout,
right.
And she runs into him in the hotel lobby, and he's like, "Oh, hey,
right?
I didn't know you were going to be here.
What's going on?" And her boyfriend Brad is played by Anders Holmvik, Anders Holmes, uh-huh. who was in Workaholics.
I knew I knew him, but I was forgetting where I knew him from. But I was like, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah, yeah. So like, he's kind of shocked to see his girlfriend there.
And he's obviously not real comfortable to see her at that moment.
Yeah, he's very... But then like, as they're talking, another guy kind of walks by them. He sees them and he like quickly ducks his head.
Yeah.
And then she's like, hey, isn't that Ryan?
Yeah.
And then she's like, hey, Ryan. And then Ryan's like, oh, hey, guys.
What's going on? There's the guy.
Yeah, hey, man.
Hey, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, it's like, and they're like, hey, what's going on, Ryan? And Chelsea's like, hey, isn't Ryan wearing the shirt I got you, like a couple months ago? Hey, Brad, why do you have a hotel key in your hand?
Right.
Hmm.
I wasn't upstairs in a hotel room having gay sex with your boyfriend.
They won't disturb me. I'll be masturbating.
That wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So Chelsea has a a little revelation there. Yeah, her boyfriend's having a gay affair behind her back.
Yeah, so that happened, and of course she gets upset and leaves, and Andre goes after her, and it seems like that's...
And she tells him all about, like, there were warning signs in her relationship. She was like, we had a normal sex life, and then one day we were just having sex, and he was like, hey, put a finger up my butt.
Yeah.
That was the thing he asked her to do, and that she didn't really want to do it, but she wants to make him happy, and so she does that, and then it becomes their thing.
Yeah, because as she thinks, like, as she says, like, as they're having sex, and he says, hey, put a finger up my pooper. She thinks about her grandmother saying, do whatever a man wants to do, because if you don't, you'll find another woman at will, which I guess is something women get told.
And this is not just Rosario Dawson telling the story. We see flashbacks of this happening, and they're hooking up in a variety of places. And
like airplane.
Finger up the butt, finger up the butt, finger up the butt.
It becomes all...
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, just a digit in the duty hole.
Yeah.
And soon it becomes all he wants.
Hey, you know, if that's your thing, you more power to you. You go for it.
If that's what you like, that's what you like. Do
we're not
you.
Here to kink shame.
Nuh-uh. Whatever you like up there, Godspeed.
As long as it's you're consenting adults and all that.
As long as you're not getting, anally, prison raped or nothing like that, just have at it.
That's right.
That's where we draw the line.
Yep.
So then suddenly just becomes this thing, like things up his butt. So then at one point, she talks about how they were having dinner one time with his friends, and her boyfriend kind of says something that kind of... that she's not cool with. Like, I think one of her friends asked Chelsea, hey, have you thought about getting a place? And then she's like, it's kind of tricky here with the real estate. And then her boyfriend said, with your credit, you can even get a loan if Bill Gates signed it.
Yeah.
And that's a dick thing. Why would you do that?
You know, like, you're dissing your girlfriend in front of all her friends.
Yeah, and the gay dude you're hooking up with. I mean, that ain't right.
Stuff. And then after that, they go back home and they're things are getting started, and she goes into the bathroom for a moment, and then she comes out, and he's on the bed, he's buck naked, and he is on all fours.
Yes, he's presenting.
He is presenting, as they call it in the animal kingdom.
Da 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 da.
Yes,
grand opening.
That is the best way. He is expecting, because that is what their sex life is for him. Yeah, and she's just
but she's still upset over the things he said. So she decides to take a tampon, get some of the hot sauce that's in her purse.
Foreshadowing.
Uh-huh. See? Yeah. Chekhov's gun. And puts the hot sauce on the tampon. And
puts it where the sun don't shine.
Ha!
And
then we just see a man screaming in pain, naked, with a tampon sticking out of his butthole.
Yeah. This is a story that is told in this movie. This is...
Told and shown. I think it's... Yep. I think it's his dude's actual butt. He seemed like, I don't know if he's...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was his butt.
I mean, I don't know if it was a stunt butt or his actual butt.
But. No, I think if you want to have this part in your movie, you hire someone who is willing to show his butt and do that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? We see Chris Rock naked his own self.
A lot of male nudity in this.
A lot of male, like when the movie started and it showed the R rating, it was like, this movie is rated R for crude language and explicit nudity and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, we're in for a good time.
Yeah. Saturday night.
But this movie was graphic.
Oh, yeah. Put the kids to bed. Yeah. This is too hot for TV.
Yeah. So Chelsea, as you might imagine, she is rather upset.
Right.
And so she is very tempted to fall off the wagon. She walks into a liquor store and...
Right. She just like... But she doesn't buy any of it. She just kind of... It's something she does where she kind of looks at the liquor and like kind of smells the bottles and stuff.
She's eyeing stuff and she's like, oh, I remember this. This was my favorite.
Like,
And Andre follows her in, and he's like, hey, you don't want to do this. This isn't worth it. And, he's like trying to talk her down.
Right. And but she's still upset. And then it turns out like her and Andre kind of get into an argument too at some point where she talks about like how maybe the relationship with her and with him and his fiance isn't that great. And then she talks about, they get into a spat.
They get really personal. They start pushing the buttons and.
Right. And then it comes to the point where Chelsea's like, you know what? Uprise looks like a shitty movie. I don't think anybody's going to see it. This movie looks like bullshit.
Yeah.
And then they do this thing that that happens a lot in movie where they just the man and the woman are just screen fighting one another,
mm-hmm.
and then before you know it, they just end up making out and kissing.
Yeah,
which I was like, I don't know.
They're overcome by the passion.
Yes, and then they just before you know it, they're just making out in a bathroom somewhere and in a coffee shop.
I don't think that has ever happened to me. I don't think I've ever gotten into a big screaming match with somebody and then the next minute we're making
out. Just furious make out passion.
Yeah. No, I don't think. Do you think that happens in life?
I don't think so.
Or is that just a TV and movie thing?
I guess maybe it happens. It never happened to me. Whenever a woman screamed at me, like, I just apologize immediately and cry.
Yeah.
But apparently some people are screaming at women and getting to third base.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Cheers and Moonlighting lied to me as a kid.
Are you saying Ted Danson and Bruce Willis were liars? And
perhaps.
Son of a...
Perhaps. I don't know.
If I can't believe 80s sitcom, what can I believe?
I don't know.
Guys, call in if you've ever been a screaming match which led into a hot and heavy, il flagranto delicto.
Yeah.
As they say.
Yes.
So they make out in the bathroom, but they decide to stop and pump the brakes, because Andre's engaged, and maybe they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, he got the rings earlier that
day.
Yeah,
so maybe...
Maybe the timing's not the best.
Maybe we shouldn't be doing...
And she also just broke up with her boyfriend for having an affair on her.
Yeah.
It's like, oh... And hiding the fact that he is apparently gay.
Yeah. It's like, maybe I'm getting married tomorrow, so maybe this shouldn't be done.
So, timing, not the best.
Right. So then they pump the brakes, then...
They actually were like, oh, you should get your hand out of my pants. No, you should get your hand out of my pants. And they actually count, and they're like, okay, count of three. We both get our hands out of the other one's pants.
One, two.
Was kind of cute.
Yeah. So then Andre remembers, oh, I got to call London to do publicity over the phone over there, but my mm-hmm. phone's dead. So Chelsea's like, all right, you take my phone. She takes her, which, I don't know, I'm surprised people give each other, other people their phones. That's like... That's a no-no in some circles.
Well, he had to get his hands on her phone.
Her phone.
So he gets her phone. He starts snooping. He's looking through her pictures and stuff.
Right.
And he finds an email that's from her editor.
Yeah.
And I think that the title was just problem. And he's like, hey, Chelsea, I still need your new James Nielsen piece. Which James Nielsen, if you don't remember, he was the New York Times critic who was ripping apart all of Andre's movies. So he finds out that this Times critic that he hates is actually Chelsea, who we've previously established writes under aliases for her less serious work.
Dun, dun, dun.
So Andre is not happy about this revelation.
So he confronts her and tells her, you've been James Nielsen this whole time. And he's mm-hmm. Yeah, I was trying to find the right time to tell you. I didn't know what it was, but he's not having it. He's like, you've been ripping me apart for years. You were saying stuff like, "Oh, O.J. Simpson came to justice. When will Andre Allen come to justice for his horrible movies?" And he's like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, my mom read that shit before she died. That's
right.
That's messed up." And so he storms off. She runs after him, and she just he basically gets in the cab and says, "Yeah, this interview's over." And he said, "To let you know why I don't do comedy anymore, why I stopped, and now I rigorous honesty, because every time I did comedy, I was either drunk or high. I never did
or both.
I never did it sober.
Yeah,
now I don't know if I can do it sober. And I'm scared.
Yeah. He's never done. He's never been funny clean.
Yeah, which is rigorous honesty. So then he mm-hmm. So after that, he ditches her and he takes off. He goes to a movie theater to see how his movies." Doing,
mm-hmm.
Uprise. He kind of goes into a theater, but he walks in, and he sees a huge line of people. But these people are waiting to see the new Tyler Perry movie called Boo.
Yeah,
where Madea is in a haunted house, and I thought this was hilarious because this movie came out in 2014.
Yeah,
in 2016, Tyler Perry came out with a movie called Boo, a Madea Halloween.
Because apparently Tyler Perry literally saw this movie and he was like, hey, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that.
It even has the same name.
So it was he took a parody or kind of like a take that Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
I mean, at best it was a good-natured rib.
Yeah. And he took that rib and he made money with it. I mean,
Tyler Perry, man.
I mean, bravo.
Tyler, that is...
I'm not even mad at that. I can't be mad at that.
You can't begrudge him that.
I was like, wow, that is next level.
Yeah.
I applaud else. You, sir.
And
Tyler Perry, I'm available for your movies.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And and then Andre was like, well, how is Uprise doing? And he goes into this theater, and there are like less than half a dozen people in the theater.
Yeah, it's like literally like 8 or 9 people.
And he's like, well, how's it doing in the other theater? And they're like, this is the only theater. This is the only screen.
Oh, and a little quick point. The person that worked in the movie theater that showed Andre the movie, that's Tichina Arnold from Martin and Everybody Hates Chris.
I don't think I recognized her.
Keep your eyes peeled, brother. So, yeah. So, after seeing that no one's watching Uprise, you know, Andre gets into a bit of a funk. He decides to, like, go to a supermarket and he's buying comfort food.
Yeah.
He walks past the booth.
And he's doing that thing where he, like, starts eating it while he's walking the aisle.
Yeah.
You know, before he's paid for it.
That's the mark of somebody who's truly just like, oh, things aren't going well.
Yeah. Now he's really hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Like, when you see, if you're in a supermarket and you see somebody eating, you know, popping Oreos that they haven't paid for, they're like, oh, that person needs a hug.
Yeah.
And so anyway, as he's going through the supermarket aisles, he walks past the alcohol aisle. He sees, you know, cases of beer. And he's like, oh, boy. And he gets a six-pack. He pulls out a bottle. He looks at it. He opens it, and he has a drink. He relapses.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, before you know, he's just, you know, getting a whole bunch of six-packs. And he's like,
yeah.
He's about to check it out. In the checkout aisle,
he looks behind him, and he sees a display for Hammy the Beer.
Yeah, they never explained, like, what that was. Like, I guess it was like a... I guess Hammy has a beer tie-in or something.
Or they were just trying to piggyback on the popularity of Hammy the Bear and just using that as their name, and it wasn't an official tie-in. Because I can't imagine it would be an official tie-in without him knowing about it. But
yeah. But yeah, apparently he didn't know about it. And he's like, Hammy,
maybe it's another logical flaw, another conceptual hole at the center of this movie.
Yeah. It's a little, yeah, just, you know, yeah. Suspend disbelief a little bit.
Yeah.
So anyway, he sees this and he has a full-on meltdown. He goes nuts.
Yeah, and he starts tossing things at the display and
just smashing bottles, just breaking everything, just wrecking shop. Of course, people there to videotape it on their phones.
And it's also being picked up on the security camera.
Yeah, that too. And the cops come and they arrest him and they put him in the who's gal.
This was so out there. This was so extreme of a sequence the way they shot this. That I thought this was a dream sequence for a moment. I thought this was like, it was going to like flash back, and this was like, this was just what he was tempted to do in his head.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It was the way it was shot, I was like a little like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah, but but you know, it's him falling off the wagon. It's him going nuts. It's him hitting rock bottom again.
Right. So it was a little jarring.
So, you know, I see why they did it like that. That was just my initial impression.
Right, absolutely. So he's in the Who's Gal. It's of course it's on videotape.
You like saying the word Who's Gal.
I like saying somebody's got to bring back Who's Gal.
Yeah, it's a good word.
If no one else is going to do, it's going to be me.
All right.
So he gets locked up in the pokey, and of course it's on videotape. So of course it's already on TMZ, and it's already
gone viral.
Yeah, people already know about it.
Celebrity meltdown.
Yeah, he gets a call. He gets one phone call, and while he's in prison, and he's on the phone with Erica, and he's like, Erica's like, I can't believe you did this. Like, yeah. But you know, we could smooth this over.
Could say it was for the show.
Right. Her assistant, played by Romany Malco.
Romany Malco.
Yeah, you don't really see him anymore.
I don't see him in nearly enough stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't.
It was weird. Like, he broke out in, like, the 40-year-old Virgin, and then after that, he did, like, a few things here and there.
Yeah.
Like, he was in, like, Weeds and stuff, but then he just kind of, I don't know.
I'm sure he's still working, but I haven't seen him do a whole lot of high-profile stuff, and I really like him as an actor.
He's great. I don't know.
He did a great movie with Paul Rudd called The Chateau, where they're these two guys who go to this chateau in, I think, France.
I've heard of that movie.
And, yeah, and it's a really good movie. It's under the radar kind of movie, but it was really cool. It's like a more serious type of thing, but he's really good in it.
Romany Malco, come on the podcast.
Yeah.
Or just do, you know, more high profile
or just
stuff.
Do more fun stuff that we can appreciate.
Yeah. Get on that, Romany.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes. Anyway, Erica, his fiance, is on the phone saying, all right, well, we can smooth this over. We can say this whole meltdown you had was for the reality show because, you know, everybody... everybody knows everything reality shows is fake anyway, so we could just spin this and say it's fake. So then Erica, you know, he talks to Erica, and Erica says, like, you know, look, you just need to, all you need to do is just, you know, go to your bachelor party, you know, do it for the cameras.
Keep it together.
Tomorrow you fly down here where I'm at, we get married, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then she kind of had a little breakdown, too, where she's like, look, I don't, this reality show is pretty much all I have. I don't have a talent. I don't
sing. I don't act. I don't dance. Right. This is all I can do.
Yeah, like, I'm not you. Yeah. So you need to choose me, because, like, I turned down a bunch of other guys who want to wife me up. Turned down Matt Kemp. I turned down Bradley Cooper. But I chose you. I put all my chips on you, so you need to do this for me.
You got
to
keep it together.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I thought it was really interesting, where they show she's not, I mean, I guess because usually in, like, rom-coms, like, when a guy has, you know, has a fiance that you know is wrong for them, that person, that fiance is usually kind of portrayed in its, like, terrible light. Like,
they're never humanized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, like, this was like, oh, this is a nice way to, like, humanize her. She's not a bad person. This is just, it's like, she's not, I don't know how to say it, but, like, she's not a terrible person, but, like,
not a totally terrible
person.
She's a good percentage of terrible.
All right. Like, 50-50.
I mean, you know, she's a star of a reality show. So.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're not fans of reality shows. I'll just come out and say that now.
They mostly star terrible people.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say 100% terrible people, but
if you're playing the odds.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, you're not great. So Andre gets bailed out. He gets cleaned up. He goes to his bachelor party in this fancy strip club. He has, like, a... He's in a suit. He has, like, a band-aid over his eye.
He's got one of those cool little butterfly things that, you know, people in movies always get when they, you know, because they'd have just that one little photogenic cut.
Yeah, exactly. So. That little, like, a boxer has.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Silk picks him up in the car, and he takes him to the bachelor party at the strip club, which is Hammy the Bear themed, I guess. Why would you have that?
I think it was something that the reality show decided on because it's being recorded for the reality show. So, like, we see, like, all the strippers and stuff, they've got, like, bear heads on. And,
right. Yeah. And it's
very surreal kind of scene.
It's very furry friendly.
And we get some more cameos. We see some of his old childhood friends, like Leslie Jones and all that crew. But we get some other cameos of celebrities playing themselves. We get Adam Sandler. We get Jerry Seinfeld. We get Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi.
And it's just a fun scene of just Andre talking to Adam, Jerry, and Whoopi.
Yeah, Seinfeld barely does. He does a few. He's done a couple movies, but he rarely does movies.
No.
This is a shocker, too, to see
this
him.
This could have been his first thing since B-Movie. I mean.
Was Comedian before or after B-Movie? I mean, Comedian was more of a documentary.
Yeah, but Comedian was sometime in the early 2000s.
But, yeah.
That's at least 10 years old already.
Jeepers. Wow. But, yeah, so they're all giving him advice. Which, I don't know, like, as I was watching the scene, I thought it was a kind of, it was something weird about it, because, like, I looked it up, like, this movie came out in 2014, and by this time, he was already separated, Chris Rock was already separated from his wife at this time, and of course, in this scene, it has Chris Rock, Andre Allen, talking to Seinfeld about, you know, you got to get a prenup, don't cheat on your wife,
right?
You know, just go home and wank it, it ain't worth it,
right?
And they're giving him all this advice about, you know, prenups and not cheating and being faithful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
A little too real.
Because, I mean, I don't know. For people know Chris Rock stuff, in his last special, Tambourine, he does admit that the reason his marriage broke up is because he was unfaithful and he cheated. And, like, it was around this time, around 2014, people were saying, oh, his marriage broke up because, you know, it was Kerry Washington, people were saying, or Rosario Dawson. So to hear that, to know about that, and to see this scene, it's like, oh, interesting.
I did not know that. I still have to see Tambourine.
It's good.
That on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not, I mean, as far as Chris Rock special, it really wasn't his best, but it does have some good stuff in it. Right. I still think
it's Chris Rock. I have no doubt that it's worth seeing.
It ain't bad.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, his best was, you know, Bigger and Blacker was.
It's amazing special.
Either Bring the Pain or Bigger and Blacker was probably his two best. Never Scared was very good as well. Mm-hmm. So Tambourine's good. Just you'll see it.
Watch it.
So anyway, there all these celebs are telling him about you know, stay faithful, sign a prenup. and la-di-da.
And Seinfeld's like, you know, never admit that you are unfaithful. Even if she finds a vagina in your pocket, don't admit it.
It's not your vagina!
Which is, it's kind of hilarious to hear Jerry Seinfeld say
this. Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. Like, that's not very Seinfeldian. You never hear him curse or say things like
vagina. But, I mean, that's vagina. What makes it hilarious.
Yeah, like, I think even Sandler said, yeah, at one point, my wife found two vaginas in the glove box of my car.
I told her it came with a Mercedes. It was standard issue.
Yeah, and it's a pretty funny scene to see Seinfeld in a strip club. Because, like you said, that's not very...
Yep.
Seinfeldian, because at one point there was like a scene where Seinfeld's talking to like the manager of the place.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's saying he's next to a stripper, and then he said like the stripper, she took my wallet.
Yeah,
and the stripper's like, well, I don't have any clothes on.
Like, she's like in a bikini. She's like, where would I put it?
And Seinfeld says,
do I have to say it?
It's a weird melding of like Seinfeld humor in this weird strip club setting.
It's like what Seinfeld would have been if it was on HBO.
Yes,
you know?
Very much so. So basically Curb.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, the bachelor party's going on. Chelsea meets up with Andre there. She tries to make amends.
And he's not really having it. He's calling her James.
Yeah, very much so. But they do kind of make up a little bit. Because, like, I think Andre, he agrees to, like, drop her off at her place.
She says, like, you know, are you going my way when he's leaving? And so, like, they give her a ride.
Right. But not before making a detour at a comedy club. Like, mm-hmm. I think...
The Comedy Cellar.
Comedy Cellar. The world-famous Comedy Cellar.
I was recognizing the street as they were, you know, like, they're. Right. He's like, where are we going? And I'm like, I know where you're going. I've been on that street. Yeah.
McDougal, once you see like Mamoon's falafel, he's like, I know exactly what it is.
Yeah, you'll...
I saw the opening of Louis.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, if you've seen the opening of Louis, you've seen McDougal Street. And Comedy Cellar isn't the only comedy club on there. There's like another comedy club that's just like a little ways down.
Right, right. Like if you're in
Eastville Comedy Club, right?
Eastville? No.
No, it wasn't Eastville.
Eastville's in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Right now there's another comedy club on that street called the Grizzly Pear.
Yeah.
And then
I've been there.
Around the corner. There's the Village Underground, which I believe is owned by the same people that own Comedy Cellar.
I think so. I think you're right. I think you're right.
It's because like that's right next to the Fat Black Pussycat, which is on like West 4th Street.
Yeah, we've been on the street a number of times.
Yeah, we're New Yorkers.
We're from Jersey. We're not New Yorkers.
Well,
I'm
from New York.
From New York, but you're not currently in New York.
I'm not currently in New York, but like I walked around that area enough to be like, I'm a New Yorker. Oh, I don't know why I just turned into Vinnie Barbarino there for a minute.
No, I don't know either. But
Mr. Carter.
But anyway, it's a very familiar street to most any comedian. And
right.
And they stop and, you know, so they go in to see the show and we get a couple cameos. We see like Rich Voss hanging out in front and he's like, hey, are you going up? And he's like, no, I'm just here to see the show.
Right, right. And so they go into the club, you know, they showed all the pictures on the wall of all the famous comedians that have been through there.
Including like a young Chris Rock,
in
the context of this movie, is young Andre Allen,
right? But, Louis C.K. and whatnot, and then they show some other regulars that have been at the Comedy Cellar, like Lynn Coplitz, Dean Edwards at one point, R.D. Fuqua, who's there every night and just like hosts everything. And at one point, he's like, "Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we got a special drop in. Give it up for Andre Allen." And so then Andre goes up on stage and tries to do some stand up, and it goes well. It goes very well,
and it goes well, and this. This scene I really enjoyed. One, because I've actually seen Chris Rock do a drop-in at the Comedy Cellar.
Really?
Yeah. Years and years ago, it was. I think we did this for my friend Frank's birthday. We went into the city to go see Todd Barry perform at the Comedy Cellar.
All right.
And then, you know, Todd Barry performed. He was wonderful, of course, as he is. And Chris Rock did a drop-in. He was, like, getting ready for his next special, which I think... Ooh, which one was it? Yeah, I think he was getting ready
the crowd work tour.
I think he was either doing Bigger and Blacker or Never
about,
Scared.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this was Chris Rock, and he was testing whichever he did where he was talking about how a father's job for a daughter is keep her off the pole.
Keep my baby off the pole. That's Bigger and Blacker.
Okay. So he was getting he was gearing up for that. So, but it was very interesting because it wasn't like, hey, I'm Chris Rock. He was very low-key kind of Chris Rock because he was still like working the stuff out.
Right. He's usually like a low-key guy. Like if you ever see him do stand-up or see him do a drop-in, he's not like the energetic energetic, like, you know, showman that he does, that he is on his specials. He's usually like a more of a low key, like, hey, what's
right.
going on?
Very guy. Restrained because he's still like figuring it out. He's taking, you know,
yeah.
figuring out how to best make the material work.
Yeah, but he's not like the Chris Rock, like, you know, talks like this.
Right. Yeah. Like he's not the stereotype or the cliche you think of Chris Rock stand up.
Right.
When you typically see him, unless you're seeing him like recording a special or something. But this was very much like a movie kind of stand up thing where they go up, they have no idea what they're going to say,
right.
and they just come out with a polished set.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh, we're doing this all off the top of our head.
Oh, hey, this is ready for Conan. How about that? Who knew? Oh, I guess I'm a comedic genius.
Yeah.
Have a good night, everybody. Tip your waitress.
So that amused me because I mean it's a convention very much that you see on TV right. and movies whenever somebody's doing stand up.
Yeah, I always get that. Like I always notice that too. Like whenever they do a movie about like a musician,
yeah.
and then they're putting together a song,
uh-huh.
like somehow the song pretty much comes together like magically within yeah. like an hour. You know,
yeah.
Smoke on the water. Hey, smoke on the water. Yeah. Flying in the sky. And then it's like...
You never see anybody struggle.
Nope.
And with, you know, it's just like, it comes out as genius. And
that's
it's,
right.
You know, he never like looks at a notebook and is like, oh, let's see, what else do I want to talk about? And,
yeah.
You know, he's never at a loss for words. He's never stumbling over...
It's all perfect.
He's just riffing and it comes out as a polished act,
that's
which
right.
if you're a comic, that's hilarious. Yeah. That is hilarious. That's
how comedy works.
He hasn't done comedy or stand-up comedy in like at least a decade probably.
Yeah.
And he's coming out and is like, hey!
Yeah. It's just a polished diamond just right off the cuff.
Which I found that very funny. I mean, I realize it's a movie. You have to do that.
Yeah, but
you know,
suspend disbelief. He's been sober for 4 years, and he comes,
yeah.
and he has a polished set within a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
All right,
because stand-up comedy is just that easy.
It's so easy. Why isn't everybody doing it?
Nope.
So anyway, yeah. So he comes off the set. He has an amazing set. He has a mm-hmm. rush. It's like, oh yeah, I'm still funny. I can still do it. I can do it without alcohol or weed. That's like, oh
even though
God.
He had alcohol earlier in the evening.
Even though he did, yeah. All right, yeah. I guess you're right.
He didn't have much. But
he didn't have much.
Yeah.
Maybe he had some water in between. I don't know.
But
he sobered up in prison. Maybe.
But I did think this movie it did really capture the feeling that you have when a set goes really really well.
Oh my God.
And that high that you have where. It's just like, oh my God, this was so amazing.
Dude, like the first time I ever killed on a set, like I thought I was like, oh, I'm the king of comedy now.
You're vibrating, man.
Like
when it goes really, really well.
Like I'm like up and jittery. I'm like, I'm ready to like, oh my God. I'm the new king.
A rush. And like, that is what keeps you doing it.
It's like Hollywood, I'm right here. I'm ready for my close up, Mr.
Yeah.
Neville.
Yeah, yeah.
Oof, it is. You are flying high.
Yeah, and it is amazing. And this movie really captured that feeling, and I really like that. So,
yeah, it was very good.
Because Chris Rock, of course, he gets it.
He gets it, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, on the drive home to Chelsea's place, he's still like vibrating. And then I think Chelsea asked him, like, well, what made you go back on stage? What made you want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, there was two things. Like, I remember... Because earlier in the movie, Chelsea says, oh, yeah, I remember you came to my college like 15 years ago. You did stand up. You were really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, oh, yeah, I remember that set. That was a good set. That made me think I could do it.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that made him want to go up on stage was something that happened while he was locked up that night. And this was the most surreal scene.
This was
of the
random.
Movie.
Yeah.
This is very random. So basically, they cut back to when he was locked up for the night. And he's in jail. And across from him, also in jail, is rapper DMX.
Yep.
The rapper. And I think this was like around the time where DMX was just constantly getting locked up and arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
yeah, he was like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, please, I'm DMX.
I'm DMX, man. I live here.
And that's like the only explanation we get.
Yeah, I remember when I saw this in the theaters, people were like busting out laughing at this. Because like, it's like, oh, yeah, DMX in prison. This feels right. And he has a talk with DMX, and he's like, oh, Andre Allen, I respect you, dog. Because, you know, you don't let the industry tell you what to do. Yeah, you do other things. Like, I want to do other things, too. And then he just goes, He goes on to sing, what's that song, Smile?
Smile. Smile, though your heart is breaking.
Smile when your heart is breaking. Yeah. And, like, he just sings this song. And, yeah, at this point, everybody, I remember everybody, like, cracking up because it was just so random. Just,
yeah.
You know, DMX singing this old standard song.
Yeah.
And, like, while he's singing, Smile, though your heart is breaking. But, like, in, like his DMX style, mm-hmm. everybody in jail is like, shut the fuck up, man. And like, yeah. and just Andre just staring at him all perplexed, like, what's the happening here? And I think that's the second thing that made Andre go up on stage, because I think he realized at that point that even though he wants to do other things, he's really good at comedy.
Yeah.
So even though like DMX is really good at rapping, he wants to do other things. Maybe sometimes you just do the.
Sometimes thing you're really... Your Honor is good at those other things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So maybe that's when he's like, all right, maybe I should just. Do what I'm really good at and not do Haitian revolutionary movies.
Yeah.
So yeah. So like that was he had a second revelation there.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it took DMX to sing to him to realize that.
It is very random.
It's so random.
Weird, surreal kind of scene.
So yeah. So then after that, Andre drops off Chelsea at her place, and they have this nice moment, saying, you know, it's like, oh, I'm gonna actually be in LA with my photo gallery, because she also takes, you know, pictures to the photographer,
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, I'll have a gallery if you want to come by. And he says like, yeah, you know, I can't really do that because, you know, I'm going to be married. I'm engaged. And like, you know, but they still have like a very nice tender moment.
Mm-hmm.
She kisses him and like, there's a vibe that like, oh, maybe.
And he asked her to list her top five.
Yeah. Sort of top five rappers. Mm-hmm. I think she says like, Tribe Called Quest, which I respect. Slick Rick is in there somewhere. Mm-hmm.
The Roots was like number three.
The Roots, yeah.
Because Questlove did the music for this movie.
Interesting. Interesting how they...
The Roots were just at number three.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just right there in the middle of the pack.
I respect that. Another tangent. I really love The Roots, and like the fact that mm-hmm. the Roots and Black Thought don't get as much shine as they... should kind of still bugs me, but I'm glad that they put the Roots in there, because like,
don't sleep on the Roots, people. The Roots,
dude, I was a fan of the Roots since their first album came out back when I was in high school, like in 95.
You are a Roots hipster.
I was cool with the Roots before it was cool. Like before
we get it, Darren. You're cool.
I'm on the edge of coolness. That's all I'm trying to say, people. Before they were known as Jimmy Fallon's band, I was like, oh, that's the Roots. That's like the guys I've seen 10 times in the city at concerts. They're dope. All right, but anyway. So. She goes back to her apartment, then Silk drives Alan off, and Andre Alan off, and you know, Silk says, yeah, you know, if it was me, I'd be up there. Like, and he says, like, you know, Aunt Erica will get up, she'll land on her feet, she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a blasé way to brush off through.
Yeah, and hey, Andre says something, he was like, oh, you know, you can't get with them all.
Yeah.
And Silk is like, yeah, but, you know, you can get with one. you can get with that one.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, that's true. So anyway, and after that, Andre looks through his gift bag that he got at his bachelor party. He sees, like, somebody put small vodka bottles in it. It's like, oh, I guess somebody doesn't know what I want at all.
Right.
They put this in there. And then he sees a few things, you know, in his gift bag. Then he notices in his gift bag there's a woman's shoe.
Yeah,
which is a callback to something that happened earlier in the movie when they're talking about the Cinderella story,
mm-hmm.
and how
pulls out a slipper.
Yeah, Cinderella left something back at the prince's place so the prince could find her.
Right.
So of course that Andre sees that as a sign.
Yeah. Chelsea says that's she says that the woman does a thing when she really likes a guy.
Right.
And Andre says, hand job? And she's like, no, she leaves something behind so that, you know, they can get together again.
Right.
So
and then the hand job.
Yeah.
So once Andre sees a slipper and he's like, yo, Silk. He just says, yo, Silk. And then Silk gets a smile on his face. And then that's the end of the movie.
Yep.
So you just assume that they go back and hook up or something.
Yeah. But it's open-ended enough that, yeah.
Yeah, you don't know for sure.
Right.
But that's the end of the movie, and like I don't know, I really dug this movie. It wasn't perfect, like we said. It does have flaws, mm-hmm. and it does have kind of holes here and there. But
it's an enjoyable movie. I'm glad I saw it. I really liked it. I got into it. It really the first scene is actually out of sequence. It's just him and Rosario Dawson walking on the street, and they're having a conversation, and it just really sucks you into the movie right away.
Yeah, it's very Before Sunrise or something.
Yeah, yeah. It reminded me of that. I mean, I think the movie's at its best when they're just walking around and talking, because Chris Rock and Rosario Dawson have a nice chemistry, and the characters have a nice chemistry, and they're saying interesting things, so... Yeah,
it was really good.
It was good.
So, guys, check out Top 5. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's got some good stuff in there.
And there's a little a post-credits thing or mid-credits thing where it just cuts back to the bachelor party.
Yeah, yeah.
And we see Jerry Seinfeld, and Jerry Seinfeld lists his Top 5, which are the Sugar Hill Gang, Eminem,
Wale.
I'm reading the list, and I'm not familiar, obviously. Ice Cube and Sir Mix-a-Lot.
All right, yeah.
Which... I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say I don't think that is Jerry Seinfeld's real life Top 5.
You don't think Jerry Seinfeld's down with Baby's Got Back?
What about Baby? I think he's down with Baby Got Back because
Baby's Got Back.
White people love that song.
Baby's
let's
got
face
back.
It. That is the one rap song that like every single white person loves.
Turn around. Stick it out, even white boys got the shout.
Exactly.
You know, or either that or put them on the glass.
If they played Baby Got Back at the Oscars instead of having Eminem, like even Martin Scorsese would have been like, this is my jam.
My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun. You can do side bends or sit-ups, but please don't lose that butt. That was all at the top of the dome, people. My God. Oof. But
Yeah.
But,
I do, however, want a spinoff of just Jerry Seinfeld in the club.
Yeah, that was...
I would watch that movie.
Jerry Seinfeld in a nightclub. That's all I want.
That's all I want.
Make it so, Jerry...
Jerry Seinfeld in the club, talking to bitches.
Comedians in strip clubs making, spending
Comedians
money.
In strip clubs getting lap dances.
Oh, my God. Can you believe it?
They should just do that randomly in one episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. They just go to a strip club.
Yeah, just Jerry Seinfeld and Aziz in Atlanta or something like that.
That would be hilarious.
I'm making it rain. I'm making it rain. Woo! My God. Oh, we come up with some great ideas on this podcast.
We do. That's gold. That's gold, Jerry.
Yo, gold, Jerry, gold. We put the word out on Twitter about we were doing this episode, and we wanted to see what you guys had to say. We got one from my sister, Melanie Jasmine, at Bacon Awesome Love. I put up the trailer like I always do, and she said, that was a good trailer. I'm going to watch this movie now. I always like Chris Rock as a stand-up. Versus movies.
Or
slash,
a standout, really, if you think about it.
He does stand out.
Yeah.
As a standout versus moving slash acting, agreed. Exception was Dogma. Oh, yeah, I remember. He wasn't. Yeah, Dogma, he was iffy. That was just a cool movie. Darren, top 5 DC animated movies. John, top 5 hip-hop albums. Wait, I think I meant to flip that. I'm assuming she meant to flip that.
Yeah.
And, then I saw you... tweeted her back with Alison Ashmore, Penny Hardwick, Jackie Alden, Charlie Nicholson, and Sarah Kendrew. I'm ashamed to know. I'm not sure who these people are.
High Fidelity.
Oh, okay.
Rob Gordon's top 5 breakups.
Oh, wow. That's a deep, deep cut. Wow. Well done, sir. Well done. I got to watch High Fidelity again. That's a great movie.
It's a great movie. Right. Love that movie.
All right. So, top 5 DC animated movies. You got any? I mean, the only one I could think of is... Mask of the Phantasm?
Mask of the Phantasm is up there. Return of the Joker is pretty incredible. I'm due to rewatch Gods and Monsters. I really liked that, but I've only seen it the once. This last week, I rewatched the Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. That's still good.
Oh, nice.
That's for... the New Frontier adaptation.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
All right, far out.
So that's not necessarily in order, but those would probably be my top 5.
Okay. And for me, hip-hop albums, I mean, I've said on the podcast I'm a diehard De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest fan, so I'll put Tribe Called Quest low in theory. De La Soul is dead. I'll put Nas Illmatic on there because it's a perfect album. It's, like, really amazing. If you have listened to Nas Illmatic, if you want to know anything... If you never listened to Illmatic, I don't know... You don't know anything about hip-hop, I'll just say that. It's, like, it's a classic album. One of my favorites. I'll put Souls of Mischief, 93 Till Infinity, group from Oakland. They're kind of underground, but that was a superior album. What else will I put? I don't know. Maybe Wu-Tang Enter the 36 Chambers. The Roots Thing Fall Apart was really great. Common's album Resurrection, his second album.
I think you're over five now.
Am I? All right. Well,
I think whatever. I wasn't counting, but I think that's at least six.
All right. Well, whatever's over five gets an honorable mention.
Okay.
See, and what else we got? Rob Kelly at I Am Rob Kelly said, I liked it. Thought it was good.
Okay. All right.
Very simple. All right. And also,
short and to the point.
Yeah. Bill Brasky says, the rare movie that has a fake movie contained within it that then became a real movie, Tyler Perry's Boo. Can't think of any other time this has happened. Then he says, I guess maybe the Aquaman movie on Entourage that eventually did end up being a real thing, not directed by James Cameron, though.
No, and not starring Vinny Chase.
Yeah, he is.
Vinny Chase is fictional.
He is Queens Boulevard.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. That's the podcast, guys.
There's some interesting trivia about the movie that I found. This was Chris Rock. He wrote this screenplay while he was filming Grown Ups 2. He just wrote it in his trailer.
Huh.
And he took Louis C.K.'s advice to like just write it and don't show it to anybody. Mm. I think until it's done. But it was partially inspired by Kevin Smith's relationship with former journalist Jennifer Schalbach Smith, who's Kevin Smith's wife.
Okay.
And he said, Chris Rock said, Kevin Smith, who's a friend of mine, married a journalist, and there's something cute and romantic about that. So the idea for Top 5 was in my head for a while. A day in the life of a movie star, getting interviewed, falling for a girl he's only met that day. I just didn't have the balls to write it. Finally, I got a little courage and went for it. Dave Chappelle was offered a role but turned it down.
Hey, man.
Louis C.K. was cast in a role but had to pull out due to scheduling conflicts.
Pull out.
Chris Rock's character, Andre Allen, is named after his brother Andre and his grandfather Allen.
Oh.
Which, that's nice.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that works. All right. Mm-hmm. Andre Allen sounds like the name of a basketball player, but it works as a comedian.
It kind of does. Well, yeah.
Your Los Angeles Lakers, Andre Allen.
And he comes out. So that's about it. That's
right.
The behind the scenes. There's not a whole lot of other stuff. Chris Rock did talk about a possible sequel once in an interview with Complex. Chris Rock said he meets with producer Scott Rudin every week now going over this next movie, and that Rudin wants him to work at a faster pace. He also suggested that a lot of the same cast would be involved, mentioning you might want to see a little more of Leslie Jones or Tracy Morgan once he gets better. I think Jerry Seinfeld showed us things we haven't seen. And that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for damn sure.
Let's see. It was nominated for some Critics' Choice Awards.
Oh, nice.
For Best Comedy, Best Actor in a Comedy, and Best Actress in a Comedy.
Yeah, it definitely got a lot of critical praise when it came out. There you go. In my opinion, Chris Rock's best movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. And surprisingly, he has not directed another movie since then. Yeah. I would like to see more from him.
Maybe he's focusing on the stand-up or whatnot. Now he's doing that new Fargo TV series.
That's right. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah, Fargo's always been pretty tight.
So it'd be neat to see Chris Rock stretch his acting wings a little bit.
Yeah, it seems like it's just straight-up drama in this.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All right, and that's the episode, guys. Next week, it's SNL is back on the air, and we got Mr. John Mulaney.
Woo!
And Mr. David Byrne.
Yeah.
Expectations high.
And David Byrne's show, they announced it's coming back to Broadway.
Yes.
So that's exciting.
On Broadway.
I didn't realize it had actually left Broadway. I thought it was still a thing. But
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, until I read that it was coming back, I was like, oh, I thought it was still going, but okay.
I still kind of think Cats is still on Broadway. I didn't know if it was is it? It's not, right?
No.
All right. Phantom of the Opera, is that still out?
Don't know.
Starlight Express?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. It's good to know.
Yeah.
No. All right. Now I'm savvy.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, this episode, the John Mulaney episode, we're really looking forward to this.
Love John Mulaney.
I mean, amazing host, third time hosting. He knows how the SNL machine works. He knows he's a great fit. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a five-timer. He works well with the cast. He's funny. He's sharp. If he brings on Bill Hader, I'm going to faint. This episode's good. And we get David Byrne.
Yeah.
So it's one of those shows where we're looking forward to the guest host and the musical host. And
yeah. Ooh. The musical host?
Is that what I said? Yeah, musical yeah. guest host.
Musical guest.
Musical guest hosting. Yeah. Host guest.
The musical guest does not host.
Host guest.
Unless
musical.
It's like one person doing both things.
What?
It's the host and the musical guest.
What's wrong with my brain?
I don't know. Okay. So many things.
Oh, dear.
We don't have time.
All right. But, yeah. So, guys, tune in for that. It should be a hoot and half.
Yep.
And, yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible, Twitter, Instagram. And at DarrenCredible.com and all the like.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic. And you can follow the show's Twitter account at SNL Nerds Show. And please tweet at us. Let us know what you think of this episode, what you think of Top 5, the movie. What are your thoughts on SNL in general?
Yeah, what are your top five? What are you thinking? What's your top five? What are your top five SNL cast members? How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, let's let this little community of ours grow.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And yeah, if you like the show, please tell somebody about it. Share it on social media. Mm-hmm. Spread the word. Yeah, we wanna grow the audience. We love the audience we have. We'd love it if it was bigger.
Yes. Also, you know, always reviews are good. Donate to our Patreon at non-productive. Give us money. Help us keep the lights on and keep this beautiful, beautiful enterprise going.
Yep.
And, yeah, I guess that's about it. That's all I got to say, man.
Okay.
And, on that note,
Nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.